Welcome to Changemaker with founder of Gypsy Tea and social entrepreneur Zina Muzika.
This new podcast is to help you embrace change and experience amazing people and entrepreneurs. We're going to be sharing secrets, habits, and change-making abilities with you so that you can apply them to your life and make a life of your dreams.
This is Changemaker with Zina Muzika.
Hey, Changemakers. Welcome to another episode of Changemaker. I'm your host, Zina Muzika. Very excited. We have a very compelling guest today. His name is Mikey Siegel. He's a pioneer of the transformative technology movement with a vision of developing new tools that reduce stress and anxiety, increase joy and well-being, and eradicate human suffering from the inside out. He is currently co-founder of the Transformative Technology Lab at Sophia University, founder of BioFluent Technologies, founder of Consciousness Hacking, and an IEET affiliate scholar. He received an MS from the MIT Media Lab. Welcome to Changemaker.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, so tell our listeners what you're doing in transformative technology.
Okay, I'll give the big picture overview here. This is really a way of looking at technology and thinking about the potential impact, the potential role that technology can have in our lives. And sometimes it can be hard when we look around and we see the technology in our lives, which is extremely useful. And it's playing an increasingly important role in our lives every day. But at the same time, there's this growing sense that it's increasing the amount of stress, the amount of information, the amount of mental activity, the amount of burden that we feel in our lives. But actually, technology can really be anything. There are no real inherent limitations. And so it's actually saying, wait a minute, what if we started to design technology as a tool for profound positive transformation?
I would say that's a marriage of two. I mean, technology is transforming the world, so why not make it more healthy for us, right?
Exactly. And that's the interesting thing. Transformation is actually a really broad term. So yeah. I can even be a little bit more specific about it, right? Technology is fundamentally transformative. It's transforming everything around us. And so when I think of transformation, I'm even thinking a little bit more specifically. I'm thinking about our internal experience. So for example, meditation is something that has become increasingly popular in the West.
Well, I do Vipassana. I've always called it a technology. It feels like a technology, my meditation.
you are 100% right. It's an ancient technology, right? It's a human invention. It's something that was created by, you could really say, scientists that were exploring the nature of subjective experience. They were exploring the nature of the human mind.
I love it. So Buddha was a scientist, absolutely.
And he was systematic, and he was deeply exploring and understanding and documenting what is first-person subjective experience and what are the underlying causes of human suffering.
Absolutely.
And from those discoveries, he created these technologies, as did many, many other explorers of the mind. They created these technologies, which we sometimes call meditation practices or yogic practices or breathing practices or dancing practices. These are all technologies. And so the question is, can we accomplish the exact same thing, eradicating human suffering from the inside out, but can we do it using modern technologies?
And so how can we do that? So I have a Mind Valley app. What's it called? They've created a meditation app. It's like the biggest app in the world for meditation.
Yeah.
But I tend to not use it very much because if I get on my computer or my iPhone and I use an app, I find myself, you know, digging into my email or checking, you know, if I get a text from my son or, you know, so tell me how we can actually, you know, marry the two with, and also help from distractions.
Great question. So right now we're seeing a really wonderful process, right? This evolution of the technology. Well, what I'm talking about is actually already beginning to happen because you are seeing these apps showing up, right? These tools that can help us to remember to meditate, or they can help, like as a meditation timer, they can even provide us with a guided meditation, right? And so what these tools are essentially doing is they're saying, okay, how can we use technology and kind of weave it into our existing sort of technology landscape to help us to remember to do these traditional or ancient practices, right? But here's the interesting thing is, first of all, that's great, and I'm in no way opposed to that. I think that's a wonderful thing, but there's a little bit of a conflict there because it's really hard to actually practice in the traditional way in this modern context, right? Because what the traditional practices want from us is to actually unplug. But what the technology landscape wants from us more and more and more every single day is to be more plugged in.
And clicks.
And so that's the conflict that you're feeling, is it's like, okay, I have this app, which is actually, the app is itself pulling your attention into the phone, right? And but then it's actually asking you to pull your attention back into your own mind. So it's this sort of interesting conflict back and forth. So what I think are the next steps here.
So it's almost like schizophrenia. It's like meditation for schizophrenia.
Yes. It's this back and forth and back and forth. But the thing is it's well-intentioned, you know?
Yeah.
We're just learning. We're learning. And I think that what you'll see as this process continues is that you'll have technologies that actually begin to be a lot more innovative. They begin to actually know more about what's happening inside of your body and inside of your brain, and the interfaces begin to look a lot different. They're perhaps no longer just simple apps on your phone. They may actually be the devices that you wear. They're actually measuring the rhythms of your heart, right? Devices that are actually measuring your brainwave patterns, that are measuring your breathing. And these devices begin to know and understand you in a deep way, in a way that a really intuitive meditation instructor might know you, for example. And they might give you specialized real-time feedback to not just guide you in a meditation, for example, or not just teach you how to meditate, but actually deeply provide sound and light and vibration feedback in a way that can help you right now in this present moment learn to find that centered place in, let's say, a week or an hour or 20 minutes, what might have taken a year or 2 years or 5 years of learning using traditional practice. So I think that that's the potential for technology that we're looking at, this kind of deep, accelerated process of insight and transformation.
And so if it's not going to be on my iPhone, where is it going to be?
So I think that it will be partly on your iPhone. It may be devices that connect to your phone. It may be devices that are totally separate, that are off your phone. I think that, you know, personally, for me, the technology that I'm building have no connection to a phone at all. And I'm happy to sort of talk about some of those.
Yeah, I do want to talk about it. I looked at the Gnome on the BioFluent site, the anti-distraction machine. You can imagine I was instantly drawn to buying one, but I can't buy one yet. Do you want to, is this what you're talking about?
Soon. Yeah, definitely. So that's an example. So BioFluent is a space for the sort of the design and consulting work that I do, and some of those projects are sort of one-off projects or projects for exhibitions, or, you know, there's an installation right now in the Tech Museum in San Jose that I created, which is a six-person heart-breath synchronization installation. So there are these different sorts of installations that I'm doing, but there's no consumer product yet that you can buy, but hopefully soon. But so to give you an example, the Gnome, it's if you looked at it, it looks sort of like a beautiful wooden box, right?
Yeah, it's
and
gorgeous.
It has a screen on top, and the screen is different though than your iPhone screen. The screen is totally diffuse, and it could never ever display text or graphs or charts or any kind of numbers or information. It's completely incapable of doing that. All it's actually capable of displaying is this flowing, diffuse, beautiful movement of light and pattern. almost like what you'd imagine, like looking at the light shining through a stained glass window reflected on the wall or something like that. Mm-hmm. And what you do is you actually completely disconnect from your phone, and you use this as a meditation tool where you might connect headphones to it, and then you might connect to connect also a sensor that's measuring your heart rhythm. And as you sit and you watch the screen, and as you listen to the sounds that are created, what the device is actually doing is helping you to learn how to foster a calm, rhythmic pattern of heart rate variability in this example.
Got it. Right? So it's teaching you to breathe and to kind of clear your mind and just to focus on the beautiful colors?
Exactly. But it does so in a way that the way the colors are structured and the way the sound is structured is not just to be soothing. It's actually completely unique to you and based on the patterns in your body. It's something that people may have heard of. It's an idea called biofeedback or neurofeedback.
Yeah, of course. What was that video game? Oh, my gosh. I used to play this video game with my husband that was all biofeedback based.
Oh, is this is the Deepak Chopra?
Yes.
You put your fingers?
Yes.
You put your fingers on that? Yeah. So again, I think that was a little bit before its time.
Yeah.
And what you're going to start seeing over the next 5-7 years is that many domains, including the video game industry, is going to explode with these technologies in the way that, for example, right now, to win a game, it involves a lot of challenge, a lot of adrenaline, a lot of frustration, a lot of kind of keeping you on this challenge.
Yeah, my 15-year-old is a major gamer, and it's kind of a challenge for us. But he gets so energized. There's so much adrenaline and dopamine going through him, and yeah, it's rough. So
and it can become a very kind of addictive process in a way.
Definitely,
right?
Definitely.
It really, like our phones, right? The video games have evolved to become these extremely skillful tools at trapping our attention.
Uh-huh.
Every single app on our phone is competing for our attention. That's the way that they make money. That's how the economy of these apps are structured, and the same thing is true with gaming.
Yeah.
If gaming can't lock down your attention and hold it in place, then they're not a successful game. So the question is, imagining kind of what is the future of that, how can you actually lock in people's engagement but be providing them with a deep benefit? And one way of thinking about that is, what if the way you win a game, which can, by the way, be totally engaging, but the way you actually win is by fostering within yourself a sense of deep balance and well-being.
I'm totally in. I've been working with a woman who's also an MIT researcher, and she talks about dopamine and how when you're playing a video game, like a war game, these single shooter games, and all your friends are there and you guys are fighting a battle, like she basically said the dopamine hits are so high in the brain that you become wired to respond because your brain doesn't know if it's in war or not. So she's saying that the dopamine hits are so high, it's hard to change patterns because the kids get so high off the games, they get addicted to them. So for a game to actually generate calm and peace and mindfulness, I think that would be, I mean, that's really the challenge you're up against, right?
Totally. I'll give you like a first step, you know, first sort of stab at it, a project that I did recently, which would kind of paint a picture for what might be possible. But it's just a glimmer, of the possibility.
I'll take a glimmer.
Okay, here we go. So this is actually right now it's a permanent installation at the Tech Museum in San Jose. And the way it works is it's like a big table with the whole table is a huge screen. And you sit down, and this is like 9-year-olds that are using this, right? 9-year-olds that may have never actually, even heard of meditation, but it's actually quite likely they've never heard of meditation before. And they sit down at this thing, and they stick their hand on the special sensor, which is immediately when they put their hand down, beginning to measure not just their pulse and not just their heart rate, but it's actually measuring a sophisticated pattern of how their heart rate is changing over time. And by looking at this pattern, you can actually measure a certain aspect of the sort of fight-flight response in the body and how stressed or relaxed the body is.
Got it.
And so as they sit down, what the system begins to do is guide the entire group of kids in essentially a guided breath meditation. Now, of course, it's not called a breath meditation, but what the system is doing is asking them to sort of breathe along with the system. And the system is, in a sense, rewarding them as their body reaches this calm physiological balance state. And the only way for, quote unquote, them to win is for the entire group to actually reach a synchronized, biologically synchronized balanced state where all of their heart patterns, if you were to measure them and put them on a graph, are all completely look like waves that are cresting and crashing and cresting and crashing at the same time.
Amazing.
So you're actually bringing this group of 9-year-olds into a bodily, physiological rhythm with each other. And when they reach that, that's when they win.
Interesting. So they have to do it together.
They have to do it together. It's actually a group exercise, and it's based around group synchronization, not just individual synchronization. And by the way, that is now my main focus. You know, there's a lot of people looking at individual transformation, and I'm also looking at that as well. I think it's interesting, but I'm so fascinated now about this question of how can we use technology to foster a deep sense of felt connection.
Absolutely.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You're listening to Changemaker with Zena Muzyka.
Have you heard of coontogenic structural coupling?
No.
Okay, so my girlfriend is a executive at Coca-Cola, and randomly, like, she comes to me with these, like, big ideas sometimes because she's always gathering these big ideas for her marketing teams. And she was telling me about this scientific term, and it's called coontogenic structural coupling. And it's basically this research that's been done, and nothing's been really written about it yet. I was going to talk about it in my next business book, but you could talk about it from an MIT point of view, is basically when you're in the presence of another person, your cells start to resonate and morph to resemble theirs. You actually be within 30 minutes, you start to become one, kind of. So the more you hang out with certain people, that's why they say, you know, be careful who you hang out with, because, you know, if you hang out with a bunch of depressed people that are not big thinkers, you're going to end up, you know, your ideas aren't going to feel as valuable. And same with, you know, growing up with my son, you know, I obviously want him hanging around with kids who are doing great things in the world. So so it's really energetic proof that we do actually start to dance at the same speed as somebody else's. So definitely look into that, because it's what you're doing. And if you can manipulate that in a positive way, it's a little bit scary, but it's also brilliant.
That, I mean, you nailed it. I mean, that, I actually hadn't heard of that, and that is fascinating. What we've been looking at is how that manifests in the heart and in the brain, and it's the exact same idea, which is that, and in a sense, from a sort of a mainstream scientific perspective, it seems like, whoa, that's a crazy idea, that when people are in physical proximity to each other, or even just communicating with each other, even, like, for example, us over the phone right now, right, that that our bodies are actually responding to each other, right?
Yeah.
That our bodies are actually in a biological, measurable way becoming synchronized. And in a sense, that's so obvious. Of course they would, right? We are evolved as social beings. We are fundamentally interconnected, right? If a baby doesn't have this deep emotional bond at a young age, I mean, it could actually die. I mean, that's how important emotional bonding is with other people. And so I think, you know, to add what you said, I think it actually, on the flip side, what it also points to is how our own internal process of transformation, our own internal process of finding a sense of peace and well-being is not just about us. It's actually something that affects everyone around us. And as we change, and as we gain in self-awareness, that whole process actually seeps out into the world. And so this is not just about making people feel better, right?
Yeah.
Every single person that walks down this road is actually changing the world around them. And as we do this individually, we're automatically also doing it collectively. And so this is actually really a process of changing not just individual culture, but collective, global, worldwide culture.
Well, and you're also, it completely parallels spirituality in that, in the idea of non-duality and that we are all one. So if we, I mean, and that's one of the hardest things I think for people on a spiritual path to grasp is that, you know, we are all one. We are, you know, all a spiritual being. There's really not a lot of separation other than our ego and what is apparent in our, with our eyes. But, you know, you're basically saying we are all one. Here's the scientific proof of it.
Yeah, and I'm even saying the thing, and what I'm even saying more is that technology can be a catalyst, one of many catalysts for the mass, widespread, fundamental realization of that inherent oneness that's already there and already true. It's already happening. It's already fundamental to our very existence as just being this life that is emerging. But we exist in a way that we are rejecting it or feel separate from it. And that's what causes so much suffering.
Absolutely.
And there are so many traditional tools that have brought so much wisdom to help guide us to this place. But they are not so readily adopted by mass, wide, you know, mainstream culture.
Yeah.
But technology could be that answer.
Agreed.
Where we actually begin to see mainstream adoption of these ideas.
Well, and it's something we can all agree on, right? We all love technology for the most part. And we're not talking about Christianity versus Buddhism versus, you know, Hinduism. I mean, it kind of is. It's almost like the technology of science is the new spirituality, and I think you're right with that. So tell me, when you were you know, getting your degree and figuring out what you wanted to do with your life, were you already a spiritual being? I mean, we're all spiritual beings, but were you already on this quest of connecting transformation and spirituality with technology?
So all of the signs were there. But I had not yet realized it. So I was intellectually always curious about these things, but it was always a very mental thing. And it wasn't until I actually finished graduate school that I did my first sort of 2-month kind of meditation yoga retreat. And I just sort of dove deep into it. I just had this sense that I needed to not just read about it and think about it and talk about it, but I needed to actually completely dive into it. And that was the beginning, actually, of this union of these two ideas. Because as I began to deepen in my own experience, what I started to realize was that a lot of the discontent, the anxiety, the sense of sort of disconnection and dissatisfaction with life that I was experiencing, that through intentional practice, there was actual real resolution to that. It wasn't just an abstract concept, but it actually had the potential to change our experience.
It's somatic. The thing about meditation and breathing and all of that is it is in your body. And a lot of people, I mean, I remember I started out doing Kundalini yoga and Sikh meditations through my friend Jagat Jodi, who is he studied directly under Yogi Bhajan, and he would give me these things where you press certain, you know, fingers, you do certain actions with your hands. You, you know, he said I was lacking willpower, so he made me do these meditations where I basically shot energy through making a sound into my stomach while holding my hands up, you know, and that built my willpower. And I swear it worked because it was like I was using my body wasn't activated, but in my mind I knew I need to meditate, I need to be a better person, I need to focus more, I need this, I need that. But until you know it in your body, it doesn't actually sink in.
Yep. I totally agree. I think it has to be not just a conceptual knowing, but a full embodied knowing. I mean, and then there are so many different angles, right? Some people that are really much more cognitive, like me. Like, I needed to start with a book first to convince me, you know,
of course,
to make my mind feel like, okay, I can actually believe this. And then it took me time, and then I realized, okay, it's not enough. You can't just have the knowing. You have to actually get into the breath. You have to actually get into the felt experience. What does it feel like to be alive? And some people, it's like, they can't even start with the books. They have to start with the body, you know, and then we all have kind of our different starting points.
Yeah.
But totally, I totally agree.
Well, great.
Yeah.
So what can you tell our listeners? You're building these technologies and you've got this lab. What does your day look like? What are you working on now? You've created this installation in San Jose for kids. Is that going to turn into a product anytime soon? Cause I want it.
So there's two things. One thing is I'm now going down the road of thinking more deeply about how you can use technology to create a deep sense of connection between larger groups, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 people at a time, and to use that on meditation retreat context, to use that in a therapy context, to use that in a corporate context for meetings, across the board, right? It's not a religious or spiritual thing. This is really fundamentally a human thing. It's about human connection, which you could easily call spiritual, because that is, in a sense, the sense of unity with everything is, of course, the fundamental spiritual concept. But it doesn't need to sound spiritual at all.
Yeah.
So it's about creating technologies that can take any kind of person, regardless of their belief system, and help support a sense of deep connection with others.
Wonderful.
So that's one project that's in the works. But the biggest thing that's happening right now is consciousness hacking. And that's kind of crazy because it's totally exploding right now. It's getting way bigger than I had anticipated, and it's moving even faster than I can keep up with. And consciousness hacking started as a effort to build a community of people that are passionate about using and building these technologies. And really what I didn't realize at the time, but as I was actually planting a flag and creating the first community centered on this intersection point of technology and consciousness and mindfulness and well-being. And as soon as I did that, people started showing up. And people were so hungry because they had been in these isolated silos, passionate about this point, but with no one to talk about. And as soon as I started doing that, people started showing up to these meetups. We had one last night. We had this guy Tristan Harris from Google lecturing, and a bunch of other people showing projects. We have regularly have over 100 people showing up at these meetups, which now we have a Palo Alto meetup, a San Francisco meetup. We have one in Berlin, in Vienna, in Toronto, in New York. We'll have one soon in Bangalore, in San Diego.
And are these mostly like programmers, and like who are the people who come to these?
This is the first time that programmers and engineers and entrepreneurs and venture capitalists and meditation instructors and healers
I love it.
And that's the first time that all of these people are coming together with the exact same intention, saying, let's think outside the box and let's use modern tools to build new paths for self-realization and deep, profound transformation. And everyone wants to do the same thing, and there's 1,000 different ideas. There's already been multiple startups that have spawned out of the meetups. There's tons of projects and collaborations that have spawned out of the meetups. And so for me, this is the beginning of actually this cultural nexus point, the sort of the seed of it, the fuel for it, which is going to create the 1,000 new products, where in 10 years, if you sort of quote-unquote want to pursue a spiritual path, you'll have 1,000 new options for how to support that path.
I love it. I love it. Well, this is really fantastic. So people, I'm looking at this consciousness hacking event, 3 tools for human optimization.
Yeah.
Better living through better software, 3 tools for human optimization. I love it. My friend Linda from lynda.com, they just sold to LinkedIn. I feel like I need to, I'm going to connect you guys together. I think she would, I don't know, she'd love this, but she's wanting to shift the educational system. And I think there could be some great, I mean, the fact that we don't teach our kids compassion in school is just mind-boggling to me.
I totally agree. We don't teach anyone how to use their own mind. It's kind of insane.
It is. But so tell us where we can find you and what we can do to connect with you.
The best thing, you can get in touch through my website, MikeySiegel.com, MikeySiegel.com. We are rebuilding our consciousness hacking website right now. We're doing a whole kind of redesign, but you can sort of Google consciousness hacking and find one in your area. We're on meetup.com, and feel free to sign up for any of those email lists, and we'll keep you posted.
Great. Thank you. And so for those of you listening, Mikey Siegel also has done a TEDx talk on MikeySiegel.com. It's fantastic. You also contribute to Buddhist Geeks, right? Or you were on the podcast?
Totally, yeah.
I loved
that. Yeah, actually, thank you. Yeah, and actually I'm collaborating with Vincent to do a meditation retreat augmented by technology, actually.
Oh, you know what? Keep me updated on that, because that'd be something I'd be interested in doing. Well, great.
Cool.
So for more about Mikey Siegel, go to MikeySiegel.com. You can Google consciousness hacking. Sounds like, you know, the marriage of two amazing things. How do you hack your consciousness? Well, our minds are basically big computers. So this is a very exciting process. And Mikey Siegel is a rising star. And so I hope you all will seek him out and see what kind of change he's going to make in the world moving forward. Thank you for joining us. You can find me on Facebook at ZHENA, at Twitter at Mistress of Tea. I will talk to you all soon. Thank you.